The Upland Nomads podcast is brought to you by two guys that share a common passion, chasing birds and following our dogs through some of the most beautiful landscapes in the world, the uplands. Join us while we have in-depth conversations with others from all over the country that enjoy and share the same passions as us. Welcome to the Upland Nomads podcast.
I'm not electronically savvy either. I tried doing the whole YouTube thing with my GoPro videos and stuff, and I'm like, I don't have the time to do all that editing and get stuff together. So I went from doing that to just doing little teaser videos and just, you know, little 90-second things you can throw on Instagram and
right. Yeah, I've seen some of your stuff that you have on Instagram. That's what I kind of want to get into, because I have the GoPro, but I'm terrible about wearing it.
Yeah. I got a nice little setup. If you're ready to do it, I'll let you know. I'll give you all the little tricks of setting it up. And
I need to be better about using it, because there's been quite a few fun hunts that I've had. But
you know, and that's mainly the reason I use it. You go on these all day hunts and there's things that you forget, or you just don't even realize that what you missed.
Right.
So you can go back and watch all that footage you recorded. And you're like, oh, I didn't even realize that happened. Or, oh, that turned out really cool. You know, and it's just like for me, it's more like a video library. I can just go back and rewatch things and critique my dog and go, I need to work on this. I need to work on that. And,
see, when I was doing it for a little bit, because I have a few clips, I would just turn it on because I was worried about my battery. I would just turn it on when I got on point notification. So,
well, see, that's where I got a little trick. I got little tricks for that. You don't have to do any of that. I mean, you still have to turn it on, but I have an external battery pack.
Yep.
And I actually run the cord. I put the battery pack in my it's just one of those little charging packs you charge your cell phone with. I put that in the back of my Final Rise vest, and I run the cord up through the Final Rise vest, and I plug it directly into my GoPro. And then there's a setting on your GoPro called Hindsight. And that Hindsight is recording. You can have it set it where it's 15 or 30 seconds. So it's automatically recording a constant 30-second loop. So as soon as you hit the record button, it automatically just recorded what happened 30 seconds ago. Hmm. So as soon as I get something happening, whether it's an on-point notification or I want to nap something really quick, I just hit record, and I just was able to record everything that just happened before, and I just keep it recording until I'm done.
So when the Hindsight is on, you don't have to press record to like start.
It's always recording a loop, but yes, you still have to hit the record button to get your full. It's gonna automatically record what happened up to 30 seconds ago.
Okay.
You
hit the record button and then it goes back 30 seconds.
Yeah, automatically. It's constantly recording. It's like a loop. But as soon as you hit the record button, it'll save all of it.
Okay, then how do you start it again?
You just, once you hit that record button, you're good to go. Just let it run and let whatever. And then when you hit the record button again, it stops the recording. Right. So And then that battery pack, I've got one of those, that battery pack that I have in the back, the camera's on the entire time. It'll last me almost all day.
Nice.
And then I carry an extra one with me in my pack in case that one goes down. I can just flip out battery packs. And the little battery pack that comes with the GoPro.
Yeah.
I don't even have that in there. I just take it out.
Oh, really?
Yep. It's not even running off the battery pack. Because what
Grab
can
that for
happen is
sure.
sometimes it'll overheat running it that
Oh,
way.
that's
So if you take the battery pack out, it doesn't overheat as much. So yeah, I've been
good
able to
tip.
get some pretty cool footage that way. I catch something really quick, the tail end of something that I missed, hit record, and I was able to capture some good stuff.
Nice. Well, I'm gonna do an intro here and we get into this thing. Welcome back to another episode of the Upland Nomads podcast. I'm joined always by buddy Michael, and we got a guy from down in Arizona. He might be the furthest south guy we've had on here. We got Doug Davis. Doug, you want to tell people who you are, what you do, et cetera?
Sure. My name is Doug Davis. I live in Mesa, Arizona. It's just outside of Phoenix, Arizona. I'm in the pest control industry. I mostly work with industrial and commercial type businesses in the pest control world. So that's what I do for work. It's kind of handy because it's busy in the summer and slow in the winter. It gives me more time to go out there and get some hunting in the afternoons.
Awesome. That's why you have a busy work week. Not many people are
Yes.
calling for you. Have an on-call special too, that you, if you someone needs you on the weekend.
Yeah, we haven't we rotate on calls, so about once every couple of months I have to take a rotation being on call for a weekend, but it's other than that it's pretty flexible. I start really early in the morning because I'm visiting a commercial account,
Yeah.
and so a lot of them want you there early in the morning before they open up their businesses, so a lot of times I'm done by 11 or 12,
Oh,
and I have the afternoon to do what I want.
nice. Can't be that. I wouldn't want to get up that early, but
I've been doing it so long, I don't know any different. It's like it's just part of my life is getting up early.
right. Get your cup of coffee and
Yeah, and roll out.
right. Have you tried the new Gundog grind coffee?
No, huh?
No. I picked
No,
up one for what? Picked up one.
I'm not a huge coffee drinker. I'm more of a Dr.
Okay.
Pepper drinker.
Yeah, I'm not either.
It doesn't, it can be 4 in the morning. I'll drink a Dr. Pepper. I don't care.
I'm a monster and some nicotine in the morning. I can't coffee when it's cold. I can drink coffee when it's cold, but I'm not one of those
Really?
people
See, I
that,
just, yeah, I
yeah,
just, I never, yeah, I'm
I
not, I'm just.
I work outside, and so a cup of one warm coffee does it for me
Yeah.
when it's cold outside. But
Yeah, I'm about 50-50. I spend about 50% of my time outside, 50% of my time inside, but also I'm not as cold. It's not as cold here as it is there either.
well, we shut down for the winter, so my busy time is coming up here soon, and then kind of cuts off when we get that first snow, or beginning of November is kind of our
Well,
cutoff.
what do you do?
I do like hardscapes, like your paver patios,
Oh, okay.
retaining walls, earth moving.
Oh
Yeah,
yeah, so of course you got to wait till the ground thaws for all that stuff.
Wait for yeah.
So
So I run a
you're running 16-hour days probably.
no, about usually on average about 12-hour days, usually 8 to 8. So
Oh, nice.
five days that
That's.
we and Fridays are we're usually done in a decent time. So
Oh, nice.
Friday, there's most of the time we're done right after lunch here, but some days, there's days where you need to, you're working out of town or something like that. You gotta work until you're done. So,
Yeah.
but yeah, most of the time we're done. So I really can get after it hunting, like you said, when winter time hits, kind of. So,
Yeah.
and that's when everybody kind of stopped coming to hunt here. So, less competition. But we still get out quite a bit early in the season. Because we don't work weekends, so.
Don't work too many weekends either. And I try to, like, I'm the same way. I'll work 10, 12, sometimes 13-hour days, depending on what's going on. But I always try to make my Friday an early day and makes it kind of feel like you got a bit of a longer weekend.
Right. It's nice we can get out to the lake or something like that. The wife and I can go to the lake and hang out there for the weekend. So now that we have AC at the lake, we're good.
Hey, there you go.
Oh, it's so we're so humid here that it's nasty. You get like high 80s, 90s, and it's just like 100% humidity. You just want to sit in an ice,
Oh,
sit in a refrigerator. But yeah. So I'm with you on that. The small window of working. We're actually busy. Doug, how many you got? How many dogs?
just one right now.
Just one.
Just one. And he
What
keeps me
breed?
plenty busy. He keeps me plenty busy.
What breed is Charlie?
He's a German Shorthair Pointer. And
The shorter point.
he just turned 7.
Nice. So what got you started in that ones?
Well,
Or
you want to
who got
start
you
it?
started?
Well, so I guess technically, officially, what got me started is my uncle gave me a when I was about, I don't know, this was 30 years ago. I was probably about 29 years old or so, 28, 29. My uncle gave me a black lab, and I kind of toyed around with some waterfowl and did a little bit of quail hunting, and I was, had lots of kids, pretty busy, so I didn't go out a ton, a lot, but did a little bit here and there. And I did that. That was like that for a couple of years. I ended up giving my black lab away to a buddy of mine. Can't remember why I did that, but the actual magic started getting into the upland hunting is I went to a outdoor expo, and there was a gentleman there advertising his pheasant hunting farm. And me and my brother-in-law are like, we gotta go do this. This sounds like fun. So we went out to this guy's place. We didn't have dogs. And honestly, guys, I didn't even really, I mean, I heard of pointers, but I didn't really know what a pointer was. I knew what a black lab, I mean, you could tell me, hey, black lab. Yeah, we know pneumatically what a black lab was used for, but I really didn't know much about pointers. And so we go out to this guy's place and he's like, do you guys have dogs? I'm like, we're like, no, we don't have any dogs. They're like, okay, well, I got dogs and it's, X amount of dollar fee to use my dogs. I'm like, well, I think we're just gonna go out there and go up and down the fields and kick and see if we can, see what we can get. Because we're like oblivious. We have no clue what we're doing. We're just like, this sounds like fun. Let's go do it. I think we ran up and down that field for probably 30, 45 minutes, and we could not, like, where are these birds at? Where are these? We're like, dude, there's nothing, there's no pheasants in that field. He goes, oh, yes, there is. So, we busted out the wallets, gave the guys money, and he brought his dogs out. And he's like, okay, this is what's going to happen. He goes, these dogs are going to run in here. As soon as they get the scent, they're going to slam on point. And when the bird flushes in the air and he got the all clear, don't shoot my dogs, shoot the bird. Good to go. The dog will re just stand right there and wait. The dog will bring it back. We're like, sounds cool. So we're sitting there watching this whole thing go down. And this guy had English pointers. And so dogs out there zigzagging around, quartering. Watch that dog slam on point, that big tall tail just standing up straight up there, just not moving. The guide walks in, flushes the pheasant up, and I shoot. Pheasant goes down, dog runs over, grabs it, brings it back, and that right there just did it for me. That right there was the day that I said, this is what I want to do. This is it. This is the hobby. I'm all in. I mean, it hit me like a ton of bricks. Like, I gotta have a dog. I gotta have one of these dogs. So I think probably within about, I don't know, 6 months, I got my first English Pointer puppy. Didn't know what the heck I was going to do with it because I didn't know how to train it. So you got to look back. This is probably about 1990, 94, 95. The only thing available back then for dog training was VHS tapes and books that you could order out of the back of a hunting magazine. So take that back in time. There is no Instagram, there is no Facebook. There's just ads. Like, buy this and learn how to train your dog. So I bought a book, I bought a video, and yeah, I messed that dog up bad. But I had fun trying. We got out and I had that dog, and I've had a few more dogs since over the last 25, 30 years. And every dog's a little bit better because, you learn from your mistakes. So yeah, that's how I got, that's how the magic started.
Awesome.
And here I am
So
28 years later.
that's awesome.
So yeah,
I'm
I've learned through the years how to train my own dogs, and they come out pretty darn good, not half bad. I've learned a lot of tricks that work for me, and
so you're an adult onset hunter then.
pretty much, yeah. I mean, I did big game hunting,
Okay.
but I never, and I might have gone quail hunting once or twice when I was a kid, but as a kid, it was like, didn't even think about using dogs to go hunting with. It was just like you just went out there and ran around till you could find some covey of quail. And oh, this is fun, it's okay. But man, when you bring the dog into the mix,
Right.
and it's still that way today, it's the dogs. I mean, that's what it all is for me. It's just the dogs, is watching the going out and watching your dog work, and when I first got into it was like, yeah, I wanted my game bag full of quail or whatever I was hunting. I wanted that limit in my bag, and I'd get pretty mad at myself for missing birds and not getting my limit, and And, as I got older and been doing it a while, it finally got to the point where, like, if I can go out with my dog, and even if I shoot a couple, it's a great day. I don't care about the bag limits anymore, about how many. It's just the experience and being out there and watching your dog work.
It's always okay if the bird wins.
It's perfectly okay in my book if the bird wins. Yeah, I don't.
Say some days like my best day this past season was a 17-point day between both the dogs, and I didn't get a single bird.
Yep. There was a couple of times where it got, I can be honest with you, I think this last season that we just came out of is probably one of the hardest, most difficult, frustrating seasons I've ever had. It was just so dry, no rain, no moisture, and the quail were just acting so differently than I've ever seen them act before. These dang things, they would just get up and run, or they'd get up and they'd fly a quarter mile away, and you sit there and watch where they land, and you'd go to where you think they are, and you can't find them in sight. You're hunting all day long, and what made it frustrating was just because you're in the birds, but you can't get on the birds. It's like they're just, and so it was even frustrating. It was even frustrating the dogs, as hard as they were trying to find them and get in on them. So, it was a tough year this past year, but I look back at it now that the season's over and I've reflected, I'm actually kind of appreciative and grateful for the season because I think it made me a better hunter because I had to change it up. I had to figure out different ways to change up my tactics to try to find these quail, and I think the same was for my dog Charlie. I think he had to adapt as well. And watching him figure out these quail and watching how he was working, and it was a pretty good cool experience to see how he could figure these little gambles quail or the scaled quail, whatever we're hunting. We adapted and we conquered. It was so with a tough season, it was we just yeah we came out I came out with feeling actually feeling pretty successful in the end.
Was it the same? You said gambles and squail, or gamble and scales. Was it the same with Merns then? Like they have a tough year too?
Yes, extremely, even more so.
Yeah.
Merns were really tough this year, for everybody that was out hunting them. The scenting conditions were not great, and it was a big struggle for everybody.
You guys are the same boat for like we were for with Sharpies and Huns then.
Yeah,
It wasn't
I
the
think
dryness.
that.
It was the dryness. It was the wet that hurt us. And then we got dry, and we
Yeah.
didn't get the
Well,
hoppers.
not
We
only
didn't get.
because of the, not only because it was hot and dry, but the population is really down right now because we've gone through 2 years of hardly any summer rain, and that's what Mearns quail rely on for their breeding and their hatching. Is they we need that summer rain so the grass gets thick and tall, so there's plenty of a big a plenty enough of a food source, a water source. They've got to be able to hide from predators, and so they need that tall, thick grass to hide from predators. And so it's a big combination, but in a nutshell, they rely heavily, the Mearns quail rely heavily on summer monsoon rain to be able to survive and have a good hatch season. So, and like I said, it's been 2 years where it's been not real great rain. Going out this last year, there was air, there was, it was real, you'd be walking a little while, and all of a sudden it would go from a patch of some pretty heavy grass, tall grass, to where it was just nothing. And so a lot of people struggled and had a tough time. Some people didn't find any. I think the guys that went out there and really gave it their all and hunted hard are the guys that came out with some birds. So it was one of those seasons where you really had to work hard to get into birds this year.
Yeah, I was famous for Sharpies and Hans. It was a lot of miles for not a lot of birds. Which was crazy because the year before it was like
Great.
kind of amazing. And we had like and we're I think a lot of people were expecting like a good year because we didn't get like any snow last year, winter either, so probably.
I went hunting Mearns a couple of different times down south, where most of the Mearns are found, the more popular area where Mearns are found. And so a little bit of a story. A buddy of mine that's a big deer and elk hunter told me about an area. And that's what he mostly is. He's mostly a big game hunter. He's not real privy to quail species. Like he didn't know how to identify a quail. Just a quail is a quail to him. And so he said, "Hey, Doug," I go, "I was out hunting deer, and I came across this spot, and there's quail in there." And I'm like, really? And and I know of the place he was telling me about. I'm like, dude, are you sure there's quail in there? He goes, "Doug, I was out there walking, and I flushed up two different coveys of quail. Just scared the crap out of me. I walked right on them. Like they were flushing up from under my feet." And I'm like, okay, I go, okay, did they look like this? Did they look like this? Were they gray with, you know? He goes, yeah, they were. He goes, yeah, I'm pretty sure they were mostly gray. And I said, okay, well, that sounds like scalies. And he goes, yeah, I think that's maybe what they were. So he was telling me this at Thanksgiving time. And I'm like, well, all right, I gotta go. I'm gonna go check out. I got to go make a trip. This place is about 3 or 4 hours from my house. So I was going to make a weekend trip out of it. So I finally get up there about the last weekend of January. So Mearns was open. I get up there and I'm looking in this area and I'm like, this doesn't look like any kind of country that quail would be in. Like, I don't even know why quail would be in here. Like any kind of quail. I like maybe gambels, but this is way too high. Because I was at like 6,000 feet. Now, it seems too high for gambels. I'm like, and so it was just puzzling to me. So anyway, get Charlie out. We head up and start working it. And, Charlie, we're out hunting. It's probably 45 minutes an hour, and Charlie slams on point, and I'm like, "Are you kidding me right now?" And start walking in towards him. He's in kind of a thicker, some thicker trees. They were cedar trees, which was really puzzling to me. I'm like, "Okay, cedar trees, huh?" And I heard a flush. I didn't see him. I heard the flush. And then I could see him bolt out from the trees. I'm like, oh, there's quail in here. So we keep working. He gets on his second point. And I was able to get in close to that one. These quail flush, and I could see the distinct mask of a Mearns quail. And I lost it. I'm like, are you kidding me? There's Mearns quail in here? So anyway, and it was big coveys. It was 10, each covey was 10 plus birds. And that's a pretty good size for Mearns quail.
Can you tell it wasn't as long an average recovery size for Marines?
Usually an hour, usually an average is maybe 6 to 8 on the average. 10 to 15 is considered pretty good size. And this was a good, these were good sized coveys. And I'm like, I was losing. I was like, this is Mearns quail country in here. Mearns aren't even, I've never heard of Mearns being in any place like this. And so I took two male roosters, and I took two female hens, and I called it. Walked off the hill and called it. And I was like, that's good enough for me. That's all I'm doing. Because I knew that Mearns were having a tough year, and I didn't want to do very much damage, taking too much out of the covey. So I was ecstatic that I found him in there. I was ecstatic that I was able to finally get my Mearns quail that I was already had tried three or four different times to get. And oh yeah, it was exciting, exhilarating, and I was so dang happy.
I'd imagine, especially when you weren't expecting them.
Especially because I wasn't expecting those to be in there. I was just like, this is so cool. So yeah, I've got some pictures up on my Instagram of that trip. That's my only trip I made where I actually got Mearns quail.
Do you have a video of that one too?
Yeah, I've got a little video up of that one, yeah.
So I think I remember you saying, that's Mearns quail or something like that.
Yeah,
Yeah.
Yep.
So Doug, what does a typical season start to finish kind of look like for you? Like, where do you start hunting? Do you go anywhere usually?
Last, not this last season, but the season before, we went. Me and Spencer Daines took a big, nice, long looping road trip from Arizona up to the, I guess it was like the northeast corner of Montana. I can't remember where we were that I could tell you we were close to what town. I don't even remember where it was, but we were right on the border of Canada.
We probably know
It was a 25-hour trip.
what it is.
So we drove up there to Montana. We spent 3 days, four or 5 days. I don't remember. 4 days. We weren't there as long as we wanted to be. Shot some sharp tail, shot some huns. And then from there, we shot over to Idaho, by Hell's, near kind of over by Hell's Canyon. And we hunted chukar and more huns there, hunted grouse, dusky grouse. And looped back around, came home. That was a 11-day trip. This past season, I didn't go anywhere out of state. I pretty much just stayed in Arizona. Started my season out hunting dusky grouse up on the mountains here in Arizona. And I got my very first Arizona dusky grouse. There's not a big population of dusky grouse here in Arizona. They're there, but they're very small pockets of them. I have been trying for 4 years to get an Arizona dusky grouse. So got my first this year. I got my dusky, I got my gambles, I got my scalies, and I got my merns this year. It was pretty exciting.
So is that like the Arizona Grand Slam then?
That's almost all the upland birds here in Arizona. I didn't get my Arizona triple, your a lot of people try to get in their bucket list to try to get the gamble, scaly, and merns, if not in one day on a weekend. I didn't pull that off. I don't think very few
Have you done it
people did.
before?
I've personally never done it in a day. I've done it on a weekend. I've never done it in a day. It's a pretty tight window to get all three in a day. You can do it. It's not easy.
I'd imagine it wouldn't be easy. Especially because they're all in different types of environments, aren't they? Or your gambles and scalies are close
There
to the same.
are some select places in Arizona where you are within a pretty short window of time where you can be from one species to another. And there's quite a few areas in Arizona where gambles quail and scaled quail will sometimes share the same hill. I've hunted them where I've had scalies and gambles in the same covey.
So what does the season look like for the dusky grouse if you said there's not that many of them? Is it
There's not
like
that
a
many there, even though there's not a ton of them, there what it is there's so many thousands of acres. It's like trying to find a needle in a haystack. I believe the limits are two or three a day. The season goes from the 1st of September till like the 11th of November. So it's a decent little season.
Yeah.
Just there's no, I don't think there's a lot of people that hunt them here, is the other thing. I'm not sure why the populations are so sparse here. I've always been curious to know and try to talk to a biologist, but I haven't ever run into one to ask him why don't they do better here in Arizona? Why isn't there more of them? Like I said, I just don't think as many people as there are hunting quail. I don't think there's that same amount of people trying to hunt grouse here.
Kind of like people come to hunt sharptails and ponds around here. More people come chase pheasants.
Yeah, I think the sharptails are a blast. I had when I was there in Montana, I thought I was in heaven hunting the sharptail, and then I got into a covey of Huns, and I about lost it. I was like, "Holy crap! This is like hunting quail back home, but they're bigger and
Yeah,
faster."
they're faster than I said. I've only hunted bobwhites, so those are only
Yeah,
quail I've hunted.
they were. It was fun. It was a good time. I had fun hunting them.
I say, which one do you take over the other, Sharpies or Huns?
Dude, that's a tough one because I mean they all have their, in one aspect you're hunting a sharp tail and they're just big and they come up off the out of the ground and they're just big and you get a hold of that thing and it's just big and it's sticking and that big old thing's sticking out of your vest and but at the same, and then so that's a different kind of rush. And then you go get into a covey of Huns, and there's 20 of them blowing out all over the place from underneath you. And That sends the heart racing. So,
Yeah, and they
dude,
make
I
that
don't.
screech. They make that
Yeah,
screech at you.
I don't know how I could ever tell you how I could just pick one. I guess if I had to pick one, it would be the sharp tails just because it's more meat to eat.
I don't know. It's a tough question too for us. I think almost every day I'd take the Sharpie, though. They're just native, they're cool birds. And yeah. But Huns are like a really close second around here.
Yeah. I mean, if you were to ask me if you could only pick one bird for the rest of your life to hunt, you could only hunt one species, what would it be? It would probably be quail. Is it just never get it never gets old for me. You just get a
That's
big old covey that has that thundering wing beating flush. That sound that just goes off and they're coming out from all over the place. I get excited every time it happens 30 years later and getting on quail and hearing that flush. I still get excited for it to this day. Never gets old.
Yeah, quail was a lot of fun. Jason Bobwise was a lot of fun in Iowa. That was a blast. New appreciation for the quail.
Yeah, I've never hunted wild Bob Whites. It's definitely on my list someday to go do.
Yeah, I want to do it like just because we got into pheasants and quail because where there's not like a there's enough you can get into them. But not enough, like you're gonna shoot a limit of quail, and that's totally fine. But I'd rather go, I want to go someplace where I'm just gonna chase quail. No pheasants, or maybe a couple pheasants.
Well, here to me here in Arizona, it doesn't matter which species of quail you're hunting, whether it's gambles, scalies, or merns. They all have their own special quality, and they're all in their own way tough to hunt. To me, they all got their own little and unique ways of escaping and hiding and getting away from you, and I think I like hunting him because it's hard. You got to work for it. And I think that's what makes it funner, is because they are harder. So seems like it's more satisfying at the end of the day to know you hoofed a few miles up and over a few hills. To get on
Right.
a few bird to get on a few birds, you know, it's a feels like a big accomplishment when you finally make something happen.
I gotta ask, so when we went to North Dakota, or not North Dakota, Montana, how long did it take you to get into your first birds out of the truck?
In Montana,
Yeah.
it wasn't long at all. Probably 40, probably. And well, see, year before last was a really good year.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to say probably within, and I think I have the video of that too on my, I think I have it on the YouTube channel of my first ever Montana sharp-tailed grouse. I believe it was probably 30, 45 minutes out of the truck. First bird, first shot.
Nice.
Nice.
I say
Yeah,
I
it
just had
was.
to ask because we when you were same year you guys were out there in Montana, I was in Wyoming sage grouse hunting, and we had gotten it was a 16-hour drive for me to get to where we were sage grouse hunting. Well, my dad like jinxed it. He's like, well, hopefully you don't drive all the way out there and shoot birds a few hundred yards from the truck. And I was like, well, I think I might take that because, I'm driving so far. Well, here I shot my two sage grouse like 500 yards from the truck the first day.
Yeah. It was really cool because Charlie was, we were up on this hill, and Charlie went down this ravine where there was a big group of trees. Remember, I can still vision it right now. Big group of trees, yellow, golden colored trees. Still had the, anyway, Charlie went down in there, and I'm standing on top of this hill. And about at the same time that Charlie's beep went off, that he was on point, this big old sharp tail comes shooting up out of this ravine, and I had this perfect shot. It was almost level, it was almost eye level with me at this coming up out of this ravine. And I shot that thing, and it landed all the way back down in the bottom of the ravine. And so Charlie had this long retrieve. I mean, if I played the whole video, I mean, I edited it for time, but if I was to play the whole video, it took him probably a good minute or two to get that bird back to me. It was like a good, I think that bird sailed a ways before it finally dropped. Because I think he was probably a good 250 yards away from me where he grabbed the bird, and then he had to come up from that ravine. He had to come up the hill on top where I was and bring and retrieve the bird back to me. But it was just like, it was an awesome experience. It was pretty not only exciting for me, but it was an emotional experience for me because it was a huge bucket list I filled. You remember back when I said, you know, this was back when I was 28 years old, thumbing through hunting magazines and seeing, reading an article and reading, seeing pictures of hunting, people hunting these sharp-tailed grouse, and seeing the pictures of the, you know, prairie with grass up to your thighs as far as the eyes could see. And guys, I've been dreaming about that day for a very long time, and to finally be there and experience it and watch it unfold, and it was pretty special. I don't know how, I don't know if I'll ever be able to beat that
Everything you could have wanted and envisioned it to be.
again. Everything I wanted and envisioned be, it just all came together, and something I wanted to do for many, 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 many years.
That's awesome. It was all it cracked up to be, huh?
Yeah,
And
it
more.
was, you know, and the thing is I see people on Instagram that go on, you know, that they come travel across the US to come to Arizona to get their first Mearns quail. You know, I know exactly how they feel. I've had that same experience with the sharp-tailed grouse. It's like they waited their entire life for years to finally make the trip to Arizona to get a Mearns, and you're just like, I all these years of reading about it, and now here I am, and I finally did it. It's a un You just can't beat that experience.
I say
You
it's
know,
safe.
to me standing here, I'm like, I'm here in Arizona all the time. I get to hunt them as much as I want, all I want, every year. So, you know, the only way I can relate the experience is because, yeah, I know I wouldn't experience that driving 25 hours to Montana hunting to hunt grouse. You know, it's like, yep, I know, I get it. But the people that are in the state and get to do it all the time, you're like, yeah, okay, cool.
Right. We're blessed to be able to chase sharpies and huns and pheasants and all the good stuff.
Yep.
So, but we don't have quail.
Darn it.
it.
But that's why we go to. We all share each other's. That people want to go experience chirpies, they come up here. People want to go do quail. Those three quail species that you can get
But
down there. So.
isn't it kind of amazing how cool the upland community is? How we all interact and we all want to share. We talk to people on Instagram, and you're talking to people, complete strangers on Instagram that share the same love for, the sport, and you're talking to complete strangers, or you're meeting up at Pheasant Fest, and you're going, if you ever find yourself in Fargo, North Dakota, you better call me and I'll take you out and we'll
Right.
go hunting. We'll go share a field together. I don't hear things like that from deer hunters or elk
No,
hunters.
you don't want somebody to come with you.
Exactly. Exactly. But it's like you can talk to a complete stranger and say, you get your butt here. I'll take you.
We did that this year with one of our good buddies. We just were at Pheasant Fest with him, Jake Perry, from Michigan. I saw the one day he was driving. He's like headed to Minnesota, something. Might get into North Dakota, and I was like, "Well, if you're getting to North Dakota, meet me at this town at this time." And he goes, "I'll be there." And I was like, "And we'll go pheasant hunting." Hopefully, I was like, "It was November, so it was getting a little tough for sharpies." But it was like, "Well, we can get into a few sharpies. We can get into a few, but not the best area for them." We got him some pheasants, and then he took off. But I was like, "Oh, dang, what a crazy!" I thought he was joking. He was like, "Yeah, I'll meet you there." He slept in
Well,
his car.
what's funny is one of my first real experiences of of Matt Davis, Final Rise Vests. I first learned about him when he first started advertising about the first vest he's ever come was going to come out with on Instagram. Saw the vest and I'm like, man, I gotta get me one of those. And he had his phone number on his Instagram post. So I called him up. Hey dude, really interested in your vest and I want to buy one. You can tell me a little bit more about it. He answered all my questions. And so I ended up buying one of the very first vests that he sewed.
Oh,
It was
you still
probably one
have
of
it?
the no,
No.
I actually sold it. But it was probably one of the first 50 he sewed. And anyway, he sent me the vest. I got the vest. And so I called him back and I said, love the vest. Now I just got to put it to work. And I said, I really like to come to Utah in September and hunt grouse up there. Can you give me some pointers? And he says, I'll do better than that. If you're serious about coming here, I'll take you. And so I
That's a
said,
compliment.
are you being serious right now? And he goes, I'm very serious right now. He goes, you come to Utah? He goes, I'll take you hunting. And I said, give me a few days to figure this out. I ended up calling him a week later and I said, when is a date good for you? I said, nail down a date. What is good for you? If you're serious, I'm coming. He says, are you being serious? And I said, yes. He goes, because I don't get very many people. I tell people all the time they're welcome to come. I'll take them, but none of them really show up. And I said, I'm coming, dude. You give me a date. So he gave me a date. We met up. I drove all the way to Utah. We met up. We spent a couple of days hunting dusky grouse together. And yeah, that was a kind of a cool little story, cool experience to and now and now you look at Matt Davis where he is now with his vest and his company and
Yeah,
He is a solid dude, man. I tell you, that is as nice as they come. And I was just floored that somebody would invite me to come hunting with them, you know. And yeah, cool experience.
Right. Just wanted to get any dusky grouse then.
What's that?
Did you get any grouse then?
Yeah, we got a couple.
Nice.
Found a few.
I say Matt, he gets after it too when he goes, it looks like so.
And I've been trying, like, we can't ever start schedule. He's so busy now, and our schedules are so messed up. I've loved to try to get with him again and go do a chukar hunt with him, but it's just the guy's in a different level now, in a different world, and he's busy with his company, and he's running all over the place, you know, filming hunts.
Right.
So it's been really hard to try to get back with him and go hunt. So,
Oh, he's a good dude for sure. Talked with him a few times. Just had Pheasant Fest and whatnot. So,
yeah.
and the guys that he has around with him,
Yeah,
Alan
Alan
Rafferty.
and Derek are really good. I've hunted with this. I hunted with them, and when we all hunted, all of us hunted together when I was up there.
Nice.
So yeah, good group of guys. I talk to them all the time, either through Instagram or on the phone. There's probably not a month that goes by that I'm chatting with them.
I have a few friends that I've hung out with that are like that too. Give them a call once every couple weeks, or they call me. Mike and I, we text back and forth on the daily, so
Yeah. So, you know, I think it's a really cool, I think it's a really cool gang of people we have here in the upland space, you know.
Right. Yeah, not many deer hunters or even waterfall people would probably be willing to
No,
take you
I
out
think it's
to
just
their spot.
it's a completely different feel to me. And I think that's why it's drawing more and more people to do it is, you know, I love helping people. People reach out to me quite often on Instagram asking for, you know, different types of advice and what did you do with this? What did you do with that? How did you do this? How did you do that? And what do you think of this? And I love just chatting with people and answering questions or sharing information. I think it's great.
Right. Yeah, that's the beauty of social media is to be able to pick people's brains.
It's kind of cool too. You talk to somebody for a year on Instagram, conversing back and forth, and then all of a sudden you're meeting them face to face at Pheasant Fest. You know, it's like, hey,
Right.
finally, nice to finally meet you.
Done that, not even taking them hunting or gone hunting with them. I said I met the guys I hunted with in Iowa, just to talk to them over social media, and Steve has cast iron kennels on
Oh, okay,
Instagram,
yeah.
Steve Hall, and I was like, oh, it looks like they got a nice or like a cheap hotel down in your area, and he goes, I was like, he's like, you're not staying at a hotel, I was like, you're gonna stay at my place. I was like, you sure? I can go to a hotel, it's fine. And he's like, no, you'll stay with us. And I was like, okay. So no, it was great. We hunted every day between him and my buddy Jared that I met down there. BC's best friend, Jared. Then I hung out with those two guys. Jared runs short hairs and Steve runs setters, so it was a fun trip.
Yeah.
I'd say not many people would just let you. I just feel like not many people would let you just, yeah, you're staying at our house.
I know,
You're
right? See what I mean? It's like,
getting this stranger, you don't even know who he is. I've talked to him on the phone. But yeah, it's a crazy world we live in. I feel like most people I talk to, I can be like, yeah, come up here, you can stay at my place. I don't really care.
Yeah.
Not that my house is
I don't, yeah, I
big
don't
on
think I
trust.
don't think I have that kind of trust.
No.
My wife
There's
would be like,
people.
"You're gonna do what? Who's coming?"
there's That's why the first time I met my buddy Tim Wegeman. He has taken Tim Wegeman up on adventures. He has a YouTube page. And first time I met him, I was like, "Oh, we should get out and hunt together." And I was like, "Well, I'm headed to this area and these dates." And I was like, "I got a hotel room. You can just crash. I don't care." And my wife was like, "You're gonna get just meet a random guy and stay for like 4 days in a hotel room together? Yeah, why not?"
I have had that same conversation with my wife. I'll sit there and go, "Who is?" She'll be like, "Who is this person?" I'm like, "Oh, I've been talking to him on Instagram." And you're just gonna go, now you're gonna go hunting with this stranger? I'm like, do I? Well, I mean, am I gonna be getting a call that we found your husband's body later? I mean.
That's what Liz like. You're more trustworthy than I am. And I was
Yep,
like,
that's
well,
the same thing I got.
yeah.
Yeah, I think I've been asked a
I
time or two, what if he's a serial killer?
What if he's not a, what if he's not a hunter at all?
Yeah.
Is
I'd be like, dang, he does a really good job pretending, man.
Yeah.
I had to ask him too. He
Are you a
listens
serial,
all
killer first before I
my
invite you to my
I
No.
had no Tim. Tim, he'll laugh at this when he listens. But we were up there hunting, and Tim got, and he has a lot of YouTube videos, and he always seems like he's a pretty good shot. Well, we get up there, and he's missing. Like he's like in the sheets,
He
like.
edits all of his shots in,
No,
all the
no.
good ones.
And I was like, geez, Tim. And he finally started to hit some shots. And I was, geez, Tim, I was wondering if you had somebody else starting to shoot the birds for you on your YouTube page. And he was like, I can't believe he said that. And then now we've gotten to know each other so well. And it's just kind of been a running joke. And I was like, and he shoots pretty lights out, actually. But it was just like the one time he hunted with me. It was just, and he shot his limit in a couple of days, but it took a little longer to get there than others. But so I ripped him a little bit, and I was we didn't besides talking on Instagram or through a text or call, I'd never met before. And I was like, geez, I was starting to wonder if you actually shot the birds in your video.
I actually shoot worse. I think I get nervous. I don't know what it is. I think I shoot worse when I'm people are with me. That's, I think that's why I go by myself more than I do with other people. That's like I shoot worse when people are with me. I'm like, I don't know. I don't know why, I just do.
Well, Doug, we've talked about a lot of things under the sun. We talked a little bit about GoPro before, but what are some tips for guys traveling across the country to hunt? Like, not many people are making that 25-hour trek to go places.
No, and you know what too is we tried to make it as cheap as possible. So we got together, we made a menu. What we both, you know, we cut we, you know, we tried it hard to just meet a common ground of what we both like to eat and snacks. And we made a trip to the grocery store together, and we grabbed all of our goods and everything we wanted to eat along, and we grabbed everything we wanted to eat pretty much for that entire 11 days. So we got all that. We shared driving, we shared gas, we so we got there. It took us, like I said, it took us about 25 hours of almost nonstop driving. It was, I mean, I think we stopped a couple of times and literally just took some quick energy naps. in the truck and slept for, maybe 30 minutes, an hour, a couple hours, and we'd get back in the truck and keep on trucking. And when we got there, we another buddy of Spencer's was at a campsite, saved a spot for us, and we had tents. I had my tent, Spencer had his tent, and we lived out of tents, sleeping on the ground in sleeping bags for 10 days.
Nice.
And hey man, we ate sandwiches, and we were hoping and praying that we were going to shoot sharptail, because that's what we were planning for dinners a lot of the times. We ate a lot of sharptail. We ate a lot of sharptail that, 5, 6 days we were there in Montana.
So I saw you guys looked like you guys were having like sharp tail fried rice or something like that, so.
We had sharptail and noodles, swim, and with I think it was cream of mushroom soup. So we had cream of mushroom soup, cut up sharptail, and some noodles one night. And yeah, we brought, I mean, we didn't go, we didn't cr cr completely hobo. We brought steaks, we brought hamburgers, we brought brats. We had all kinds of different stuff. We ate great. We ate good. We had energy drinks and Pop Tarts for breakfast. We made
Right.
brought stuff for ham and cheese sandwiches, peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. And so yeah, it worked out amazing. It worked out great. And we did it. I think per person, we did that entire trip. I think it was probably about, with gas and everything per person, I think we did that trip for about 700, 800 bucks.
Pretty good. Is that including licenses or no?
Oh, no, that was just for the expense of the trip, not including
Okay.
licenses. Yeah, just the actual gas, food. You had to pay a fee per day to stay at this campsite, which was like, I think it was like 15, 20 bucks a day.
Not bad.
So, yeah, we wanted to do it. We wanted to do it as cheap as possible, and I think we did a, like I said, we did a lot of planning, and we both kind of had a budget in mind of how we were gonna pull it off, because Spencer wanted to finally go, I wanted to finally go, and yeah, we just made it happen, and it was an amazing trip.
So it's always nicer to go with other people. Makes trips
Well,
cool.
especially when a long trip like that, when you can share expenses and share, everybody gets a chance to sleep and drive and keep going. And
Say, just
so,
like a trip down to Kansas City this past week, and Michael and I split that one up. I mean, we weren't in very much. We didn't have to have a, we didn't have to pay for a place to
Yeah, there you go.
stay. All we had was the gas to get down there and back, and then
But I will say, so like
food.
we split that road trip up. Like I said, we did like 3 or 4 days in Montana, and we did 3 or 4 days in Idaho. If I was to, and it was a great experience. We got to see a lot of great country, and but glad I did it. But if I was to do it again, next time I would go to Montana, and I think I'd stay an entire week, 10 days, and that would be it, instead of splitting it up.
I suppose you guys are in the
It was
herd, so.
it was a long trip, but it was a quick trip between stops.
Well,
So if I was to ever go out, and if I same thing, if I ever decided I wanted to go back to Idaho and hunt chukar and huns, I would just go there and stay. I'd stay for an entire week, 10 days.
I suppose you guys were out there and you guys were figuring it out in Montana, and then all of a sudden you guys started to figure it out, and you're like, well, we're going to Idaho, so.
Oh no, we had it. Yeah, we had it all planned out in the very beginning. We had it all figured out how we were going to get there and which way we were going to go. And
Yeah, big tip. Travel with somebody makes it cheaper for you.
oh heck, by far, yeah.
Make sure you have somebody, yeah, split a hotel room. Make sure you got somebody to split the hotel bill.
Oh, dude, there was one night it finally caught up to us. We were both so freaking tired, and we were like, we've got to find a motel for the night and just try to get a decent night's sleep, 'cause we and so Spencer's driving and I'm looking at all these motels, and a really nice one is like 125. You had your choice of a really nice one, it was like 150 a night, or one that looked pretty dang sketchy for about 70, 80 bucks a night. And we just decided, you know what? Let's just grab our pillows and we're gonna try to get as comfortable as we can. We're sleeping in the truck.
That's good.
So we had what we found a rest stop off the freeway, and think we probably got about 4 or 5 hours of sleep, maybe. I
Just
said,
on
all
the way
right.
there, or the way
This
back.
was this is this was on our way from leaving Montana to go to Idaho, which was a, I believe it was a 16, 17 hour drive.
And how far back from Idaho to Arizona?
That was, I think that was also like a 16, 17 hour drive.
Okay, you were all in for like 50 some hours driving. Okay.
Well, we were coming back from Idaho, we stopped off in Utah because his parents lived there, so we slept pretty good there. We got stayed in his parents' house, so got a good meal and some sleep.
Yeah, you can't beat that. They're probably wanting to visit with you guys, and you guys are like,
And
"Yeah,
then after the trip was all over, we finally get home, man. There was Man, I was sleeping pretty hard and I was pretty tired for about good 3 or 4 days after getting home. It wiped me out. Because you're traveling hard, you're hunting hard.
bed." Right. Then it hits you when you finally relax.
It finally hits you when you get back home.
Then the wife says to you, "I don't understand why you're so tired. You've just been
Just
doing what
he's
you
been out playing.
want."
He's been on vacation for 2 weeks.
If you count vacation, it's walking 25,000 steps a day through cattails and whatever other shitty things I can find myself. But yeah, I'll do it again. All over again.
Oh, it's you look, it's worth it, man. It's all worth it.
Right. Cool. Well, getting into the end of our show, Doug, we just have some qu questions for our guests. I'll let Michael start off with our first question.
All right. Well, first question you already kind of answered earlier. Favorite bird to hunt. But I'll let you reiterate that one.
Man, you guys are killing me. You asked me that earlier, and I'm still sitting there going, ah. I guess if my favorite bird to hunt, I guess because I'm a good old, growing up here in Arizona native and been hunting quail, and I have to say merns are still pretty high on my list and a pretty special bird to me. So I'd have to say merns.
All right, favorite breed of dog, but it can't be one you own.
Can it be one I used to own?
No, you got
Well,
pointers and
I've had a handful of dogs in my 30 years, and the only dog I haven't had yet, really, I've had flushers, I've had The only dog I really haven't had, I guess, is a setter.
Yeah. Okay, we'll put it this way. If you couldn't have a short hair, what dog would you have right now?
An English pointer.
English pointer.
I've had English pointers in the past. I would, if I, that's always going to be my second alternate. If I couldn't have a German Shorthair, I'd have an English pointer.
Nice. What made you go? I didn't meant to ask that earlier. Sorry, getting off track again. But what made you switch from the English pointer to a shorthair?
I think it was availability at the
Okay.
time. I was looking when I was looking for another dog, I was looking at both, and things just kind of worked out better. The opportunity was better, the chance, the everything kind of lined up to where that's how I ended up with Charlie, is just that everything kind of lined up to see to kind of head that direction more than an English pointer did at the time. So and I've always wanted a German Shorthair pointer. I've always wanted, reading about them and talking to other guys about them. But in years past, in my years past, that's all I ever had was an English pointer. So the curiosity was there to finally own a GSP, but it just kind of lined up that way.
So next question we have for you here. What gets two-parter? What gun are you shooting now? And what would be a wish list gun?
I'm actually shooting three different guns during my season. Each one of them is a Franke. I have my first Franke that I bought is the limited edition Affinity Partner German Shorthair Pointer Edition. It's got a picture etched of a German Shorthair on one side, and a pointing German Shorthair pointing quail or pheasants or something on the other side. It's a beautiful gun. It's a semi-automatic. Then I have an old Velocy Franke. They stopped making those back in 2009, 2010. My brother-in-law gifted that gun to me. He said, came to me one day. He said, "This thing has been sitting in my safe for 10 years and I've shot it once. Here, it's yours. You shoot shotguns more than I do." And I'm like, "Cool, thanks. That's awesome." And he says he had it in a gun case and he says, "Don't open it till you get home." We were at Thanksgiving dinner. "Don't open it till you get home." And I got home and I opened. I was like, beautiful over and under shotgun. I mean, beautiful. And I'm like, dude. So I Googled it and I'm like, this is a freaking expensive gun back in the day. I mean, it was like a $4,000 gun back in the day. And oh my gosh, I shoot that gun so well. That gun fits me so well. I shoot well with it. I enjoy shooting it. And so, and my next gun is a Franke SL 28 gauge that I just purchased a couple years ago. This is my second season shooting it. The 28 gauge. The 28 gauge is a fun gun to shoot, but I shoot better with my Velocy 20 gauge. It fits me better. So I love shooting all of them, and I mix them up all year. It's like I just like, what do you feel like shooting today, Doug? And so the next
They say
part.
variety is the spice of life, so
Of course. And of course, dream gun. Who wouldn't want a Upland Gun Company gun?
right.
My all-time dream was to have one of their side-by-sides. That's my
With
dream
Charlie
gun.
on there or no?
I don't care what the gun looks like. I really don't care what it would look like. I just I've talked to guys that own them, and they've all told me I will never own another go to another different gun again. I'm like, this is it. This is cherry.
That's what I hear, but I just not that I wouldn't like one, but I just can't bite off that much.
No, see, that's what I'm saying. So what I would say, I love Franke shotguns. Like I said, I've got three of them, and I enjoy shooting all of them. They're great guns. I my wish would be that they would come out with a side by side.
And they used to have a side by side.
I don't know. I don't have any idea. I just wish they'd have one now. I would love a Franke side by side. I'm like, come on, guys.
Yeah. Well, I just went and tested out a few side by sides at Pheasant Fest. So 28 gauge. Well, I'm looking at 28 gauge, but not all of those ones are 410s.
Dude, a 28 gauge is just a fun gun to shoot. And I had some, I mean, dude, I had some shots this last season that I was just like scratching my head going, how did you do that? I mean, I'm serious when I say that. The pattern of those little 28 gauges are just so dang spot on. There was at least a three or four times this last season where I did some Hail Mary shots, and I mean they were good 40-yard shots, and I knocked down some quail headshots where I walked over. Charlie brings the bird back to me, and it's just this, well, there's this one shot right to the dang head, and it was a good 40 plus yard shot, and I'm like, and that happened to me more than a couple of times, and I'm like, holy crap. I've never been able to do that with my 28, with my 20 gauge. I've never gotten very far shots with my 20 gauge.
So I love my 20 gauge. Just I just don't know if I want to switch, but I need another gun after I sold my 12 gauge. So
I mean, to
I got one.
me, I mean, the biggest difference is, I mean, for me, my 28 gauge is extremely light. Like, it's so light, it won't cradle on my shoulders, it falls off. It slides off my shoulders, it's so light. Like, I have to hold on to it like this. If I let it go, it just goes whoop. And I hand, like, when we're, like, if I'm hunting with somebody and we go to cross a barbed wire fence or something and I hand them my gun, they're like, what the heck is this? Like, this gun is so light. And that's what's nice about it, is it's a nice gun to carry when you're hunting, hiking up hills and hunting many, many miles. It's a very nice light gun to carry.
I said I got that this past fall. I handed my 20 gauge over to one of the guys, and he goes, and he had a SB E3. Then he's like, "Man, your gun's so much lighter." And his dad's like, "Well, it's a 20 gauge." And I was like, "He's like, that's why it's lighter." And I was like, "Yeah, but it has an extra barrel, so." You guys with your semi-autos got the got that one barrel, but I got two, so I'm technically could be it could be a heavier gun, but that little 20
Right.
gauge only weighs like 5.5 pounds, so it's not.
Yeah.
It's just a nice little gun to carry for long days. But no, I looked at a couple side by sides, and they're both like sub six. With the one being closer to 5 pounds than the 28 gauge version, I was like, ooh, that's light.
I have a lot of fun shooting that little Franke Affinity semi-auto that I have. I really love shooting it. It's a fun gun to shoot. But dang, trying to keep track of your shells and grabbing them off the ground when all hell's breaking loose with birds flying everywhere and coveys going up, and And you got all this stuff happening, and I'm like, grab your shells, grab your shells, grab your shells, find your shells. You're looking around on the
Right.
ground trying to find your shells and where they went. And I'm like, so I usually take it out when I hunt dove. And then this last season, I took it out my last day of the season. It was one of those days where I was like, I don't care if I get anything or not. I'm just going to go out and enjoy the day. I took that with me, and I actually ended up having a really good day. And I'm sitting there shooting and frantically trying to find my shells and pick them off the ground. And I'm like, crap, 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 crap. I'm like, fun gun to shoot, but not all the time go quail hunting. I can't do this. I can't do it. I need my over and under. I just need to let those shells pop in the palm of my hand and throw them in the back of my vest.
Yep. Favorite, what's your favorite place you've traveled to hunt?
Montana.
Montana.
That's
Right
my
into the
favorite
next
place I've
one.
traveled.
What's your favorite piece of gear?
Well, again, I that'd have to be my shotgun. So out there, without that, what do you got? I can't
True.
shoot anything without a gun.
All right, technical. What's your favorite piece of gear, though, besides a gun?
My final rise vest.
You're gonna get the one of the new ones that they came out with, that black and gray, or?
Probably not, because I just got one of the newest color ones last year. I got his limited edition. He only ran a few, and it's the black multicam.
Okay.
Cool.
I got that because he told me, I talked to him a lot, and he told me he was only going to run a limited amount of those on there. So I had to feel like I had to be in on that. But I really do like the new vests he came out with this year. I like his new. The new look, the new design he's got, the new material he's using. But
Yeah, we look sharp.
he looks sharp. My buddy ordered one. He sold his vest to another buddy, so he ordered that new design, and he's going nuts to get it. But I'm perfectly content with my black multicam. It's different. Get a lot of compliments on it. People think it's pretty cool looking. I think it's pretty cool looking. So I'll be sticking with that for a while. Although
Nice.
I have thought about getting the sidekick, the smaller version. Sometimes just for training and going out on a quick, 2 hour hunt. You're not going to be very far from the truck. Just a quick outing and training. That's a good little setup to have. It's more,
Yeah.
just a lot less to it. It's lighter, not so much storage space on it.
Right, yeah. So you don't. I just got the Hunt Ready's version of it, kind of.
Yeah.
Their slimmed down version. I
Yeah.
tried that out. I tested out that one last fall for them, or they sent it to me to test out, and it was fun to test out. Was had to send it back.
Yeah.
I say Heath ended up sending me one. I just out of the blue. So I was like, oh, okay. So that was cool.
That's fun.
Right, yeah. No, I can't complain about anybody's best. I think they're all pretty good.
Yeah.
I say everyone's got their own niche, I should would say, I guess.
Oh yeah.
Everybody's got their own following.
Yeah, I'm not when it comes to electronics, I'm not much of an electronic gadget guy. Dude, I'm still running the Alpha 100 and the TT15 collar. And I don't even use half the stuff that you can do on the Alpha 100. Like I stick the thing in my vest and it's linked to my Garmin watch, and I just look at my Garmin watch. This is where he is. This is where he's going. This is how far he is. He's on point. Let's go. I use my Onyx for everything else. I mark everything on. I mean, you know, mark all my stuff, all my stuff on Onyx. So, yeah, I'm perfectly content with just my old Alpha 100.
So what's on the horizon for you this upcoming season? Any big plans?
Kind of in neutral right now. Looking at new job options, different companies, maybe making a change. So that's going to kind of determine how my hunting season's going to look like. So everything's kind of up in the air right now. I would really, really love to make a return visit to Montana, but if not, I will be perfectly content and happy just to hang out here in Arizona and chase quail every day.
Happy
Maybe a quick
enough.
trip, maybe a quick trip, maybe a quick 4 or 5 day trip and go to Utah and chase some chucker for a couple of days, but nothing crazy, nothing extreme.
Nothing extreme. How far is like pheasant country from you?
There's not, I mean, closest there, like Utah has pheasants, some pheasants. I think a lot of them, I think most of the population of pheasant, it is, but it isn't wild. Like they're pen raised, but then they release a ton of them out into the wild and they have a small season for those. Other than that, there's nothing very close around here for pheasant hunting. You pretty much have to go to where you are.
Let's say, how far away from Kansas are you?
Oh
About the
gosh,
same.
geez, I don't know. That's probably still a good, I'd say that's probably still a good 16, 17 hour drive.
Oh,
Yeah.
really? But, yeah, I wonder how far of a drive it is from us to you.
I bet it's probably a good, like probably good 18, 20 hours.
One day and 2 hours.
Don't know if I want to drive for a whole day.
Oh.
We take turns.
Well, like we just need to wait for the perfect storms again. We need to have, if we can have some really good rainfall for the next, we need some really good rainfall for the next couple of years. And then you guys can come here for some amazing quail hunting. Go
Yeah,
get all three
okay.
species of quail. Just come and spend a week here and we'll make it happen.
All right.
We took 10 days, Michael. We could do 2 days in southern Nebraska. We could shoot bobwhites and make our way down. That's the fastest route.
There you go.
Let me just save up all my vacation days.
Me too. We'll go after when I don't have to take any vacation days. I'll be holding on to my personal days. For pheasant opener, sharptail opener.
Come here. The best time to come here is right after Christmas into January. That's about when it's the coldest here that you guys would actually still probably want to walk around in t-shirts.
Oh yeah, probably.
You'll
It's when you
be
go out
like,
hunting.
you're gonna have you're in that time of year, you're gonna have about maybe 25 to 30 degrees in the morning, quickly heating up to a beautiful 45 to maybe 55 degrees during the day. Sometimes it even pops up to, might get up to 65, depending on, but beautiful time of year, Might get a chance of a skiff of snow. When I say a skiff of snow, like you get a snowstorm in through the higher countries of Mearns country, and you might get like a half an inch of snow. It's beautiful. Holds the quail down. Scenting conditions are great.
That'll be fun shooting quail in the snow.
It happens at least once or twice a year. It happens. It happened this year. I actually got a little bit of snow this past January.
Nice. That's what I'd
And
be looking at, to go is when our season is done and you can start.
the Mearns country, where the Mearns are, the country is just, people don't realize it. You have to put your eyes on it and actually see it for yourself. It's just amazing, beautiful country. Like you just, you'll be, you go, and I hear it from people all the time, where it's like you come here and it's just like, really? This is in Arizona? Very, very pretty country. That these beautiful birds live in some beautiful country. So, a lot to take in.
Let's say, don't they all? They all have their own beautiful aspect to it.
Yep.
Say, those guys that like the grouse woods will say that's beautiful, and I don't know what they're seeing, but. I'm just kidding. I gotta ruffle a few feathers. Well, Doug, where can people find you on Instagram or Facebook if they want to follow along on your adventures?
I am on Facebook under Doug Davis, and I am on Instagram on Pointer's Wild Upland. It used to be Pointer's Upland Life, and I just recently decided to change it a bit. I have an old Instagram account that I started back in 2017 that was called Wild Upland. And when I started Pointer's Upland Life, that's kind of what it was about. I took it after the, it was about the pointers, it was about the uplands, and it was about the upland life. That's why I named it that way. But I kind of going back to my roots of wild upland, because that's pretty much all we do is hunt wild upland birds. And so I just kind of took that old account and brought it over to my to this. And so yeah, we are now Pointer's Wild Upland.
Awesome. So you guys heard it there. You can follow along at Pointers Wild Upland on Instagram.
Yep, and you go to my page, got lots of little short videos on there that I do with my GoPro. And I do have some videos from last year, a couple of seasons on YouTube, that's Pointer's Upland Life's under that still. I haven't done much YouTube this year. Just haven't had time to be able to dedicate my time to make a really good and edit a really good video to put on there. So lately I've just been putting just some quick highlight stuffs of my hunts with my GoPro, and sharing special moments that I've encountered out in the field, and watching Charlie work.
Michael, do you have any other questions for Doug before we wrap her up for the night?
Nope. No, I'm good.
Doug,
Awesome.
any questions for us?
You guys, just keep up the great work on your stuff there. Love listening to your stuff. I tr every once in a while I try to put your stuff on my page too, and let people make people aware that you're out there doing a podcast. And keep up the great work. Love your stuff. I appreciate you having me on, inviting me on. I always enjoy chatting it up on a podcast. It's always fun.
Yeah. It was nice talking with you too and getting to talk different than we're usually, talking about pheasants or Huns and Sharpies. And Grant, we did talk a little bit, but it's fun to do a dive into somebody with quail hunting. So
You
it was
bet.
nice talking, nice change of pace.
Yeah, I had an enjoyable time talking to you guys. It's been a blast.
Yes.
All right.
Me too, thanks.
Thanks, man.
All right, take care.